Good morning. This is Dallas Townsend with the CBS World News Roundup. Israeli Prime Minister Menachem Begin today appears to be facing a revolt by one of his senior cabinet officers over the issue of Jewish settlements in occupied Arab territories. Bob Simon reports from Tel Aviv.
Israeli newspapers reported today that Ezra Weitzman has threatened to resign as defense minister if his orders to stop work at two West Bank settlements are not obeyed. According to these reports, Weitzman made the threat in a telephone conversation with Prime Minister Begin. Weitzman is in New York right now, preparing for Begin's trip to the United States next week. The reports brought to the surface a sharp division within the Israeli cabinet over the government's settlement policy. Weitzman leads a group of moderates who oppose establishing new settlements in the occupied territories while negotiations are in progress. Another group, headed by Agriculture Minister Ariel Sharon, wants the settlements program to continue. The government has issued ambiguous statements on the issue. The Americans have called the settlements illegal and an obstacle to peace. Now they appear to be dividing the Israelis themselves. Bob Simon, CBS News, Tel Aviv.
Several hundred Israeli army reservists have sent a letter to Prime Minister Begin protesting what they call the dangerously hawkish policies of his government. The letter warns Begin against taking steps that might be regretted for many years. Doug Sager in Cairo reports that the Egyptians are now looking to Washington for the next move toward resumption of peace negotiations.
Anwar Sadat has described Menachem Begin's visit to President Carter as crucial, and senior officials here say it's now up to Mr. Carter to prod Begin along the road to peace. Egyptian officials are disappointed but not surprised that the Atherton shuttle failed to provide a basis for renewed Egyptian-Israeli talks. One foreign ministry source said all Assistant Secretary of State Atherton could get out of the Israelis was the promise to change a word or two in the proposed Declaration of Principles. American officials here say the Atherton shuttle narrowed the gap between the two positions, but the Egyptians say they see no hope of resuming direct political and military talks on the basis of the latest Israeli proposals. Doug Sager for CBS News, Cairo.
Kuwait's oil minister this morning called for a substantial boost in oil prices. He claimed his country is losing at least $1 million a day and said the only way to compensate for it is through a significant oil price increase. Kuwait ascribes its loss to the decline in value of the U.S. dollar on foreign exchange markets and is trying to convene an emergency meeting of the Organization of Oil Exporting Countries to take up the matter. In Tokyo, the dollar has recovered slightly against the yen after hitting another new low yesterday. Almost no change in dollar trading today on the principal European exchange markets. The formal process aimed at ending the nationwide coal strike is now underway. President Carter invoked the Taft-Hartley law yesterday, and a special three-member presidential board required under the law to investigate the strike is now at work. A request for a federal court restraining order against the walkout is expected later this week, and Don Webster in Columbus, Ohio, reports that today will be Education Day for a good many coal miners.
They have heard about the Taft-Hartley Act, at least enough to know they don't like it and plan to disobey it. But now they will at least learn the fine points of the law. The day will start in many regions with United Mine Worker officials from Washington briefing the presidents of various locals. They will be told how Taft-Hartley works, some history of the bill, including past union defiance of it, and the prescribed penalties for disobedience. The local presidents will then brief the rank and file. Then will come the wait until a federal court issues the injunction ordering the men back to work. Then it will be known how many will obey the law. Don Webster, CBS News, Columbus, Ohio.
More about what may happen after the court order is issued from Martha Teichner in Charleston, West Virginia.
The strategy sessions are beginning now for United Mine Workers members and coal operators who don't know yet how the coal mines will operate under the Taft-Hartley injunction. Miners say they won't go back to work unless the federal government seizes the mines. Seizure, they believe, would force coal companies to reveal to the government that they are making big enough profits to give miners the wages and benefits they want. Every day miners stay off the job under Taft-Hartley, the union will be forced to pay huge fines. And union leaders claim the UMW is almost broke. Coal operators indicate they will comply. They intend to open the mines when the injunction is signed. If miners come back to work, fine. But if they don't, The coal companies say the matter is out of their control. Martha Teichner, CBS News, Charleston, West Virginia.
From Indianapolis, Bob Fore reports on the impact of the coal strike in Indiana and Ohio.
In Indiana, officials applauded the president's decision, even though Governor Otis Bowen said Taft-Hartley was 30 days late and would not provide much immediate relief. So Indiana will keep spending $40,000 a day just to guard deliveries of non-union coal. And businesses here will still be ordered to use 25% less electricity, homes 15% less. All this even though earlier conservation efforts and shipments of Western coal have enabled Indiana to stretch its coal reserves 2 to 3 weeks. In Ohio, the situation is similar. And yesterday, one of Ohio's biggest utilities said industry would have to tighten its belt even more. Electrical cutbacks of 50% starting Monday, which could double the number of job layoffs related to the strike. So in the Midwest, Taft-Hartley is welcomed by many who say even though it guarantees very little, it cannot be less productive than steps utilities and states have already tried. Bob Fall, CBS News, Indianapolis.
State authorities have ordered severe power cutbacks in West Virginia and Maryland, cutbacks totaling 30% for industries and businesses. They go into effect tomorrow. Thousands of factory workers in West Virginia and Maryland are in danger of being laid off as a result of the cutbacks. Even though the final vote remains distant, at least the outlines of a timetable are now emerging in the Senate's Panama Canal Treaties debate. Neil Strausser reports.
Republican Jesse Helms will lead off today's treaty debate with still another amendment. This one would let the U.S. keep the radio facility for tracking Soviet ships on Goleta Island in the canal zone after the canal turnover. But the end is in sight for what had once seemed a flood of amendments. Helms and other treaty opponents yesterday changed tactics and initiated the agreement for a final vote on the Canal Neutrality Treaty, the first of the two being considered, within 10 days, well before the Easter recess at the end of this month. They're not giving up their fight against the first treaty and claim they're close to defeating it. But if they can't, they want till now undecided senators, particularly those up for re-election, to stand up and be counted if they decide to vote for the treaty. The opponents then will use the recess to attempt to mobilize constituent pressure to change those votes before the second treaty, turning over the canal, comes up for a vote in April. In the new show of reasonableness, there will also be an attempt to agree on a timetable for that vote before the senators go home for Easter. Neil Strausser, CBS News, the U.S. Senate.
Majority Leader Robert Byrd now hopes that the whole thing can be brought to an end before May 1st. Zambia this morning said Rhodesia has launched an air and ground attack against it, and fighting has been underway for more than 24 hours. A government spokesman in Lusaka says Rhodesian forces, employing jets, helicopters, and ground troops, have crossed the border. How serious the action is cannot be determined now. It could be another of Rhodesia's hot pursuit operations. The UN Security Council today continues its consideration of the Rhodesian problem, and Richard C. Hotelet has details.
In the opening round yesterday, the African nations stated their case pointedly. The internal agreement signed by Ian Smith and the three black leaders is, they say, not a settlement at all, but a formula for escalating the conflict and broadening its scope. The Africans want the council to reject it, to deny it any shred of legitimacy. Ambassador Salim of Tanzania said the Africans were disturbed by seemingly positive evaluations of the internal solution made by Britain and the United States. That is dangerous, said Salim, and could only inflame the situation by encouraging Smith to believe that he can buy more time. But, Salim went on, the fight will continue with the support of Free Africa and of others who have given it aid in the past. However, Salim and the rest stressed that the Africans want a genuine peaceful settlement, and they referred to last year's Anglo-American plan for a transfer of power as one way of approaching it without Smith, but with all the black factions brought in. Richard C. Hottle at CBS News, United Nations.
Larry Flint, the publisher of Hustler magazine, was operated again this morning in Lawrenceville, Georgia, where doctors say he remains in critical condition. However, his blood pressure is up toward normal and his vital signs have stabilized. Flint was shot in the stomach yesterday by an unidentified gunman, and his lawyer was also shot and wounded. Flint was being tried on obscenity charges, but the judge later declared a mistrial. No arrests have been made in the shooting incident.